Now our first feature titled Book Me In for World of Discovery by Keith Skipper. Our reader is Sue Potter.
It's so easy to be seduced by yesterday's news through papers smoothed into the bottom of drawers and boxes. I recall how such impromptu reading brought solace to childhood chores of those of us instantly diverted from our overdue sorting operations around the house. The m'lady lingers on when comes to call for another attempt to conquer the north face of the mountains of books, magazines and documents blocking the path to my cluttered study desk. A tinge of guilt and a tingle of excitement surface together as the first minute reveals old friends left to fade and gather dust, along with more recent fancies awaiting proper attention. Least I can do is give them piles of their own. So begins my latest chapter in an endless scaling of literature ranges in search of knowledge, inspiration, and useful companions to help make sense of a world in which real books and joined-up writing can be reduced to bit-part players. I bought a crumpled edition of The Land of the Vikings by H.V. Morton several years ago. It was first published in 1928, shortly after his best-selling In Search of England, a volume worthy of establishing him as one of the leading travel writers of the age. Henry Vollum Morton's style is too flowery and journalistic for many tastes, but he did evoke stirring images and values of a time and an environment hard to scoff at in this era of reckless destruction of our countryside. Too much polarised opinion and massive concerns over climate change. As wind howled and rain banged on the window, I reviewed antiquaintance of the Vikings and the part of England known to our Saxon ancestors as the Danelaw between the Thames and the Humber, possibly anticipating the vagaries of the local television services and outstretched arms. The Danelaw embarked today's country of Norfolk, Suffolk, Essex, Cambridgeshire and Lincolnshire. Morton claimed over 90 years ago that it formed one of the most interesting and least exploited districts in the country. Some will suggest that he and fellow journalist Clement Scott, who prized open the petals of Poppyland some 40 years earlier, did their best, or worst, to rid Norfolk and close neighbours of innocence and isolation and readiness for a brash and seemingly insatiable tourist industry. It depends, of course, where you stand over the old conundrum of discovering somewhere enchantingly different. It is right to spread the word, or reasonable to keep the secret to yourself. Scott lived deeply regret his effective selling articles. Writers like him and Morton certainly carried a lot of weight and painted exciting pictures, the latter pitching a claim for a cosy seat on the East Anglia Tourist Board of Directors with gems such as "I do not know another part of England in which the history and romance of this country leap more readily in mind." Morton's chapter on how to enjoy Norfolk betrays more than a whiff of patronising and subservience to the sort of comments already qualifying as clinches before the Second World War. We have been remarkable for shrewdness, carefulness, blunt honesty and suspicion ever since I started reading and ruminating. He noted how Norfolk people take their time, and their dialect was full of words you will hear nowhere else. While Norwich was sought out by only the most critical and intelligent tourists, a holiday on the Broads could feature a wherry seeming to glide in the air between two star-spangled skies on still nights in summer. I was tempted to give him top marks for describing Cromer as the most fashionable watering place on the Norfolk coast, before alighting upon a tribute to a part of Norfolk almost unknown and never mentioned in the ordinary guidebooks. He refers to about 30 miles of mill marshes between Sheringham and Gore Point, deserted except for a fowler or stray naturalist. They are cut across with little creeks and rillettes, and every tide sends salt water running up through the sea, lavender and samphire. Flocks of wild birds soar over dead seaports. The sea has retreated from the land over centuries, and there, far away, outlined against yellow sand bars block dots, the women of Stiffley Quay, great baskets on their head and skirts pinned up above bare knees, gathered cockles. Viking ships beached on the distant strand with big red bearded men, waddling to the shore. Ne'er a tourist official in sight.